so excited to be here. This is my family. They told me since I'm new here, I should tell you a little bit about myself. For those of you who have little kids, though, I want you to know, we got that this week in one shot. There was no crying. There was no bribes of gummy bears. So there is hope. One day you'll get a family picture like that. Okay? So yes, like she said, I am... First was a teacher, then became a nurse, and then became a podcaster. So go figure. All right? Both my kids are adopted. We dealt with infertility for 6 years, so that's part of my story. My husband is a fantastic man. He's an engineer, really good at math. I don't know anything he says when he's talking on the phone at work. I'm very confused. I'm like, wow, you're so brilliant. So anyway, I've been at Watermark for 6 years. I've become a Christian when I was 16. It's a winding road, but that's kind of a little bit about me. So, like I said, I'm married to a wonderful man, but when I was younger and growing up, the men in my life did a lot of getting big and getting intimidating to try to shut me down, and it worked. You know, some of you know men like that. And so, consequently, I grew up to date men like that. That's what I knew. And even though it wasn't healthy, it's what I was comfortable with, you know. And so when I didn't at that point understand the Lord's love for me, I didn't understand that I should be cherished and deserved to be cherished as a daughter of the King. And so I was kind of stuck in that cycle that wasn't healthy. But then in my early 20s, I accidentally started dating this really different kind of guy. He was calm, and he was steady, and he had self-control. He was for me. He wanted me to be successful. He wanted good things for me. And I didn't know what to do with that. And so I kind of would poke at him and provoke him, because I just kind of wanted to know, like, what kind of crazy I was dealing with. When he went crazy, what was it going to look like? And he wouldn't. He wouldn't go crazy. And so... he just kept going with the nice guy thing, and it really irritated me. And so I was very confused. So I came to the logical conclusion that there was something seriously wrong with this guy. And so I'll never forget the conversation that I had with him, because I don't have a problem just coming right out and saying stuff. Some people call it abrasive. Sometimes it comes up in community group. I don't know. It's fine. So I came right out and told him, like, what's wrong with you? Why don't you stand up to me? Why don't you get big? What's going on? And so I'll never forget what he said. He said, don't mistake my kindness for weakness. It's easy to say whatever you want, do whatever you feel, but it takes strength to stay quiet and not react to what you've got going on. So my kindness is not weakness, it's strength. And I have never seen anything so strange as that man. That's why I drew a conclusion that was completely incorrect. And I share this story because I think the Corinthians were doing the same thing with Paul. He was acting very unusual to what they expected, and so they drew conclusions that were incorrect. So I want you to turn with me, if you have your Bibles, please, to 1 Corinthians 9, and we're going to see that it was love that compelled Paul to surrender and sacrifice and stay focused. So the first thing I want to talk about was Paul's surrender. If you remember last semester, before the holidays, long, long ago, when we were 10 pounds lighter, Paul had talked about how if eating meat sacrificed to idols is going to cause your brother to stumble, don't do it. So he's talking very generally to the church. But then in chapter 9, we see him be very specific and focused on what he has currently surrendered for the good of the gospel. So surrender. Let's define surrender. It's to give up something that's yours to someone else, usually because you've been forced to do so. So think of waving a white flag. I surrender. Or crying uncle when you're wrestling with your sibling when you're little. My little brother is like a gigantic, so I was constantly surrendering. Uncle. It's basically, I give up, I don't have a choice. But interestingly, Paul was not forced by anybody to give up his rights. He was compelled by his love to give up his apostolic rights for the spiritual development and the good of the Corinthian believers. Them knowing Christ better was a higher priority than his apostolic rights. His love was greater than his liberty. Just to be clear, though, Paul was an apostle. The two things you had to do to be an apostle was to see the risen Lord and be called into ministry by him. And that happened to Paul. He checked both of those boxes on the road to Damascus. So the rights he was giving up were having his physical needs met by the church. So think about food. Think about if you were given like a special card or something to where every time you went to the Walmart, you never had to pay anymore. Would you not be like all about that? You know, I would be so pumped about it. So if you can think about it, the Corinthians were like very confused that he was giving up the free food situation. So I think about what I'm given free in my life. Free coffee by Starbucks on my birthday. I never give that up for the good of Starbucks. What? I don't care about that. When my husband travels a lot and I get bumped up to first class, that's happened a couple times, I don't give that up for some peasant in coach. I don't care about them. I'm not concerned about them. When I get, Meg said, I have a podcast, and because of that, I get a bunch of free stuff. I get a lot of packages for free. It makes my family really upset because everything that comes, these boxes come, and they're for me. I never offer to pay them. I never offer to pay for them. My kids got free, like, Nikes for school because of my podcast, and the dog has a subscription box to, like, I don't even know. I don't even know why these things come to my house, and I take them, and I'm happy about it. So why wasn't Paul using all these rights, like all this amazing food that he had? In verse 12, he says, I didn't use this right because I put up with anything rather than to hinder the gospel of Christ. He did not want to be a burden to them in any way. So is Paul telling us never to take free things? I hope not. I'll offer me some free things. Is he saying that we shouldn't make use of the rights when they're offered to us? No. There's nothing wrong with free things. There's nothing wrong with having rights. But the problem comes when our hearts prefer those things more than the relationships. When we become less passionate about relationships and more passionate about our rights. So our love needs to stay larger than our liberty, but very often the shift changes and the greater than sign switches and our liberty is greater than love, as far as we're concerned. The shift is subtle because our hearts are deceptive. And this past year, I got off track for a season when I transitioned my podcast from being for free to monetizing it and getting paid for it. I had done this ministry podcast called Mom Struggling Well 4 years for free because I was passionate about the moms who were isolated and didn't have community like I had, or who felt like God was mad at them because they weren't perfect and they didn't know the truth of what he had done for them and how much he loved them. I was being discipled well, and I knew that there were so many people, women, who weren't, and I wanted to tell that truth to them, and I was passionate about that. But the company that I joined, they had overcommitted. They were a startup, and they weren't paying any of us for the work that we had done. And I had quit my nursing job because it replaced the income for that, and I had hired 2 employees. And so it was kind of like a problem because I was paying these employees out of, like, my grocery budget because they were not paying me money that they had owed me. And so there was a very practical need that needed to be met. But the subtler shift, more subtle shift, and the bigger problem was what had happened in my heart. I almost quit the podcast that God clearly called me to and equipped me specifically for because I was not getting what I was owed. Does that make sense? Something that I had done for free for years, happily, I was ready to stop because I wasn't getting the paycheck. My focus was off. And I did eventually get paid, and that all worked out. But I really learned a great lesson about my heart. I need to completely and repeatedly surrender my heart so that love is greater than liberty in my life. And we all sometimes get off track in this way. And if you don't think that you are ever off track in this way, then you're not paying attention. Because we all sometimes have our liberty greater than our love. And so if you're like me, you have a tendency to beat yourself up about that. Like, how did I, oh my gosh, I messed up and it's over. We are all, that's a fully devoted follower of Christ. Their main thing and their habit is to re-surrender their heart and keep their love greater than their liberty. So you just have to simply confess, which means agree with what God already knew. You were off track. And then just thank him for the forgiveness through Christ that you already have. And then just continue on. And so the good news is you're only going to have to keep re-surrendering until you die. And once you die, it's over. Okay? So just think of that. So I just want to ask you, like, what area of your life do you need to surrender to the Lord? Or maybe re-surrender? I know, you don't know me. I'm already up in your business. I'm sorry. So we see that Paul surrendered. Next, we're going to see that the sacrifice that followed that surrender. So sacrifice. This is where the rubber meets the road. Surrendering in your brain is so great. But when you actually have to walk it out, things get a little gritty. Sometimes we count the cost, honestly, and decide not to. For example, I recently realized there is a big difference between deciding to be a runner when you're at brunch with your friends who are runners, and you've eaten a lot of carbs, and you're so cozy, and you decide to be a runner, and then when you actually become a runner, that's a different thing. I have a picture to show you. So that's me deciding with my runner friends, and then this is me, oh, wait, it hasn't happened. Hasn't happened yet. I do have some brand new running shoes, though. So there's that. We love the idea of sacrifice, but the actual sacrifice can sometimes be a different story. All to Jesus, I surrender. It feels very different on Sunday morning than on Tuesday night when your kids are jacking with you and it's been a long day. And you have to be actually sacrificing the thing that you said you would surrender, right? But Paul didn't just talk about sacrificing. He actually did it. The next section gives us a glimpse about how his surrendered heart led to some very real sacrifices. In verse 19, he says, "Although I am free, I'm not anyone's slave, but I've made myself a slave to everyone in order to win more people." He goes on in verse 22 to say, "I've become all things to all people so that I may, by every possible means, save some." So let's look at a couple definitions of sacrifice. I got these from the World Wide Web. Number one, offering up something precious. Okay, that makes sense. Another one, surrender of something for the sake of something else. Okay, easy enough. We can all agree with those. This last one I found, though, reminded me that as Christ followers, we are living in an upside-down kingdom. It's confusing to outsiders. Frankly, sometimes it's confusing to us. It is so opposite. So the last one is to sell at a loss. This is the way the world views sacrifice. This is sometimes the way I view sacrifice. We are usually concerned with the person that our sacrifice might bother, which is us. We are our favorite people. Let's be honest about this. And so when we sacrifice, we think of it as a loss. But I wanted to show you Paul's next words because it's such a different perspective. Paul's next words are, "I do all this sacrificing because of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessings." That does not sound like a loss at all, does it? Paul knows that he ultimately in his sacrificing is gaining big time. So I don't know about if you guys know this or not, and I'm new here, so I'm just learning it. But when those of us who speak come up here, we have the great opportunity to practice learning what we're gonna be talking about in our daily lives. And so God has given me a lot of opportunity to practice actually sacrificing this week. And so I wanted to just let you know, I'm not an animal person. I don't have ill will towards animals. I just don't see the point of an animal. And God saw fit to bring into my family a daughter who is obsessed with animals, especially horses. She prefers them to people big time. Big time. She's she's not a human person. She's definitely an animal person. This is her on Trigger is the horse's name. So she was adopted older, and so we fight hard for connection. Attachment has not come easily, and any gains we've made have been hard won. And it's frustrating for both of us. It's heartbreaking. I don't think it's what either one of us had hoped for or wanted, but it's where we are, and God is refining both of us big time. And so horses are a part of, like, a therapeutic connecting point for her. And so I am very happy sacrificing the time to drive her to the stable, paying through the nose, like for her to be on that big animal and ride it around this in circles. sorry. The Lord has worked on me, and so now I'm happy to do that. But this week she said, you know what, Mom? I would love it if you would come inside that stable with me. I would like you to scoop some stuff from the horse. I would like you to brush and saddle. She says things like hindquarters and girth. I'm like, I'm a nurse. Give me all the blood and guts. But I don't talk about hindquarters. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it. So anyway, for an animal person, this sounds exciting. What a great time. For a nice person, for a flexible person, I'm none of those people. That's not me. And so this is a big sacrifice for me to go 3 hours a week and be inside the stable, brushing and scooping. But because I'm compelled by love, I did it this week for the first time, and I did not die. I did not die. So because I really want to love her well, and I know that this is the way to do it. So to the horse people, I'm becoming a horse person. Yeehaw. Okay. So we each have a choice to make. We can focus, though, on what we lose in the short term. For me, I'm losing, I work during those times. And I'm not around animals during those times. And I'm losing that, right? And so I can look at what I'm losing, or we can lift our eyes just slightly over what we can see and look what with an eternal perspective at all that is being gained when we sacrifice. The people around us are literally dying to know the hope that we have. And so that's what we do when we sacrifice. Okay, so first we decide to surrender, and then we get to work and actually do some sacrificing. But without this last part, we're not going to be as effective. So Paul goes on to tell us that we need to stay focused. So at the end of this chapter, Paul brings up running again. I kind of feel like he's just throwing it in my face that I am a failed runner. So that's fine. I'm just kidding. That's not actually accurate. It's not what the scripture says. But verse 24 says, "Don't you know that runners in a stadium all race, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way as to win the prize." And in verse 26, he says, "Don't run like one run." It's hard for me even to say the word run, you know? "Don't run like one who runs aimlessly or box like one beating the air." So why does Paul need to remind us to focus? It's because staying focused is hard. Some researchers, I don't know how they came up with this number, but they said that we make about 35,000 decisions in a day, which mathematically is about 2,000 decisions an hour. So no wonder staying focused is hard, right? And if we are not very crystal clear about what we're focusing on and where we're headed, we're going to end up off track, and it won't take very long. So we need to keep in front of our brains why we're surrendering and why we're sacrificing. It's because we are compelled by the great love that God has lavished on us, and we want other people to know it as well. And remember, like we've talked about, we're really not losing anything. We're really actually gaining when we participate in what God's got going on. So Paul in verse 25 says, "Runners do so to receive a perishable crown, but we are running for an imperishable crown." I don't know if you know, but the crowns that he was referring to in these Isthmian games were made out of like plants, like really made out of parsley. But I would not run across the stage for a plant hat. Would you? Are you kidding me right now? But this week when we're making 35,000 decisions, we need to pause and ask ourselves if this thing we're running for, the thing we're pursuing, if it's for a plant hat or if it's for an eternal crown. Because there's a big difference. And I couldn't help it. One more comparison. When we're compelled by love to surrender, sacrifice, and stay focused, we will not run like Andy Dwyer from Parks and Recreation. But we'll run more like Forrest Gump, who was focused and just headed off, okay? So I wanted to let you know, the strange man that I was dating, he ended up becoming my husband. We've been married for 15 years now. And what used to perplex me and just irritate the fire out of me that I couldn't get him to do what I thought he would do, he was compelled by love to love me well by God's love. And so that has changed me. Now I understand Christ's love for me because of his modeling it for me, and I am more Christ-like because of that as well. So I just wanted to ask you, what is your one faithful step going to be this week based on what Paul said? And I want you to be encouraged to stay the course. When you're compelled by love, when you're living surrendered, when you're doing those sacrifices that a lot of people are never even going to see, eternity is being changed.